Coming off this most recent California legislative session, there's a big gap between what Governor Newsom had promised during his campaign for governor and what he and the legislature ultimately ended up delivering. The Los Angeles Times recently did a Q&A with the governor focused on what he thought about his administration on the issue of housing. And he said it wasn't a problem that could be solved overnight. He pointed to legislation like State Senator Scott Wiener's bill, SB 50, which was designed to increase the density of housing in single-family neighborhoods that were close to transit lines. But, of course, the question with that is, where are residents who live in those single-family communities, and how much are they going to be willing to tolerate with higher density coming into the places where they live? The pressure for these kinds of bills, like SB 50, is only going to be increasing with a housing crisis here in Southern California. And that pits those single-family communities against members of the state legislature. Joining us to talk about this important issue going forward is David Garcia, Policy Director at the Turner Center for Housing Innovation in UC Berkeley. David, thank you very much for being with us. First of all, it's my assumption we're only going to see the pressure for this kind of zoning change ratcheting up. Do you think it more likely something sweeping like this passes next session?
Well, good morning, Larry. Thanks for having me. It's good to be back. I do think, given the significant wins that happened this last session on funding for affordable housing, on tenant protections, there's going to be a significant focus on doing something more sweeping around the land use reform in the state of California. In some respects, California is playing a bit of catch-up. If you look at what Oregon did last year, they passed significant reforms on opening up exclusionary single-family neighborhoods, and I think you're going to see a lot of the same discussions here in California, particularly because we have Senate Bill 50 that is slated to be brought back in the second year of this session.
Also with us, former Los Angeles County Supervisor Zev Yaroslavsky, who directs the Los Angeles Initiative at UCLA's Luskin School of Public Affairs. Zev, also a former member of the LA City Council. Zev is going to be speaking at the Sherman Oaks Homeowner Association about the future of single-family neighborhoods. This issue is very close to Sherman Oaks residents' hearts, given that they are very close to transit and could see significant changes in their community if a bill like SB 50 were to pass in the next session. Zev, it's good to have you with us again. Do you think it's inevitable these single-family communities are going to change?
Well, I don't know whether it's inevitable or not, but I don't think there's been a really thorough discussion about what this bill, the SB 50 bill, does. When we talk about transit, you know, all of us want to see more housing around transit and more development around transit. It makes common sense. But the way the state law defines transit is any bus line, any local bus line that runs once every 10 minutes during the peak hours, that's every commercial street in the Los Angeles Basin. That means that the entire Los Angeles Basin would be rezoned for seven-story buildings with no limits on density, with practically no requirements on parking. That's what that bill does. It's not just about housing near transit. When people think of transit and major transit stops, they think of the red line, the blue line, the green line. They don't think of the Melrose bus or the Cesar Chavez bus in Boyle Heights, or the Crenshaw bus or the Vermont bus in South Los Angeles. Every neighborhood in Los Angeles, for all intents and purposes, would be rezoned. And it's not just about, you know, there are appropriate places to increase density. And the city of Los Angeles is doing that as we speak. And they've been criticized. Some of the mayor has, and some of the city council members have been criticized for increasing zoning. In fact, last year, the city issued permits for more apartment buildings than they have in any single year since 1981. So the bills that have passed in Sacramento over the last several years, and there have been dozens and dozens of them, including this past session, have had an impact, and the economy has had an impact. But make no mistake, Larry, that new construction in this town is in California is not going to produce affordable housing. It's producing high-end housing, market-rate housing. And if you're going to increase density in places, and Los Angeles certainly has been doing that. My beef with the city and with the state and with Scott Wiener's bill is that it didn't demand anything in return from the landowner. When you double or triple the density of my property, you've just doubled or tripled the value of my property. I ought to give something back for that windfall. And that something should be that a significant percentage of the units, not 10%, not 15%, but 40 or 50% or more, should be set aside for affordable housing, which 40% of the people who live in Los Angeles County need to live in affordable housing. They have average incomes of household incomes of less than $60,000 a year.
But Zev, you know the developers are going to say that just doesn't pencil out. We can't build that many subsidized housing units and make a profit.
That's not necessarily the case. And that's, you know, when you increase somebody's property value and give them the right to build unlimited density and don't require him to put up parking, he's getting a windfall. And that's why the real estate industry and the high tech industry is funding the whole campaign to get SB 50 and similar legislation passed. This is a windfall for them. Get something in return. And let's find out what that sweet spot is. How much density do they need in order to set aside a significant percentage for affordable housing? But the crisis in this state is the affordable housing crisis. It's not housing. If you're making $150,000 a year, if you can afford to spend $2,800 or $3,200 a month on a one-bedroom apartment, there's no shortage of them in Los Angeles. And I don't know about the rest of the state, but certainly not in Southern California. But if you're making a minimum wage, you can't afford anything close to $2,000 or $2,500 a month for any housing unit. And those are the people we have to be concerned about. The reason Scott Wiener's bill didn't pass the first time he put it up is because the affordable housing advocates went nuts on it, because there was nothing in there for affordable housing, which should tell you something about what's motivating that bill. And then in the second iteration, SB 50, they put up they dressed it up a little bit with some so-called affordable housing provisions, which were very minimal and cosmetic. And so that's the issue. And the tragedy of all this debate is that if you rezone all the single family homes in Los Angeles County and in California for multiple dwelling units, buildings, you're not going to create more affordable housing, but you're going to destroy a lot of communities.
Well, and what's here for the longtime residents, the homeowners who are going to see these large structures go up in their communities, Ev?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
What do they get back from this? Because this would have a negative effect on the typical single family home's value, right? Unless it's being sold to a developer to be torn down and redeveloped.
Well, that's right. And that's what the developers are counting on. They'll come to you and they'll say, Mr. Mantle, I'd like to buy your house. And by the way, I bought the house next to you on that side and next to you on that side. If you don't sell it to me, your house isn't going to be worth, you know, the paper it's written on, and you'll sell. And that's what they're doing. That's what happens every time a massive rezoning has happened. And let me tell you, Portland, Minneapolis, which have tried this, South Chicago, which has tried this densification, this ending of single family homes, that hasn't done a thing. It hasn't scratched the surface on the affordability question. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have to build more housing. And there's a lot of housing being built in Los Angeles today. There's tons of housing being built on the West Side, which is one of the most affluent neighborhoods in the country. It's happening, but it's not affordable to the people who most need the housing and who are being bumped out of their housing and onto the streets of the city. And well, so we have to be honest about it. And if we're going to have a discussion about densifying, then we have to have a discussion about who benefits from it, aside from the real estate industry.
And what about the issue of control? Is this something that local communities should fully control? Should the state be able to bigfoot it with a bill and say, hey, you guys aren't doing your part. We're going to take over and mandate what you have to do.
Well, I'm a local government official, historically for 40 years, and I'm partial to local government knowing, you know, what's best in their communities. Los Angeles has a plan concept that was developed by our former planning director back in the 70s, Cal Hamilton. It was called the centers concept, where you'd have major centers like downtown and Hollywood and Van Nuys, and NoHo and Westwood. Century City, those were the centers. And then you'd have medium density areas, which would have, it wouldn't be single family, but they wouldn't be high-rise skyscrapers. And then you'd have single family homes. And, in low-density areas. And that's been the concept by which we've been living for.
All right. Zev, I need to wrap, and I know you need to run too, but thank you very much. Zev Yaroslavsky, who is a director of the Los Angeles Initiative at UCLA's Luskin School of Public Affairs, former L.A. County Supervisor and former L.A. City Councilman. We'll continue our conversation with David Garcia, our other guest, in a moment. Just want to assure you, we are keeping our eyes on the brush fire in Pacific Palisades. It's just about an acre in size. It was first reported just less than an hour ago near the 500 block of North Palisades Drive. The fire is burning uphill. Fortunately, there's not wind at that location right now, so that's to the benefit of firefighters who are trying to extinguish it. But the fire is burning towards homes. There have been no evacuations called for at this point, but it's not a complete brush area. There are homes that are nearby. Right now, we're talking about the future of single-family neighborhoods here in Southern California. As each year, the pressure to increase density in suburban areas of major California cities increases. And the question is, what is it that would make residents of those single-family home communities more comfortable with denser development? Is there anything that could come with that or not? I'd like to hear from you at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. From UC Berkeley's Turner Center for Housing Innovation, Policy Director David Garcia. So, David, your response to what we heard from Zev Yaroslavsky.
Yeah, so a couple of things. I think it's important to note that Zev is right, that the market is never really going to produce truly affordable housing that is affordable to the families making the least amounts of income in our communities. That being said, I don't think it's fair to characterize a bill that would reform land use as solely benefiting market rate developers, because affordable housing developers have a very small, limited area in which they are allowed to develop today, mostly because we've concentrated areas in where dense multifamily housing is being built, even though we need that for not just high income earners, but lower middle income earners as well. That's why groups like Habitat for Humanity and some others are supportive of land use reforms, not just in California, but throughout the country. Another thing that we need to consider is that this simply is not just saying we need to build more housing in single-family neighborhoods simply for the sake of building housing there. This is really an issue of inclusiveness, and that if you look at the areas that have the highest life expectancies, the highest educational outcomes, those are overwhelmingly single-family neighborhoods. And this country and the state has a history of very exclusive and intentionally exclusive planning that keeps certain folks who rent out of these communities. So it's a bit of a social justice issue as well.
So your view is that people who rent should have access to rent in any community?
So I think that is an argument that a lot of folks who are for significant land use reform will make, in that, you know, the best schools, the best amenities are oftentimes kept in these more low density single family areas. And so a lot of Californians will never have the opportunity to live there, either because there is no rental housing there or to buy a single family home there is simply out of reach.
Of course, you make the argument the reason in many cases those schools are so good, it's the residents who were there that for whatever historic reasons or otherwise have helped to cultivate those schools. Damien Lemert Park, where gentrification has been a huge issue, says, I think what needs to be talked about is the experience on the ground for low-income residents and people of color when they see these developers coming into their communities. David Garcia, this has been hugely controversial with planned large-scale developments in the Baldwin Hills and Lemert Park areas of Southwest LA.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely something that should be taken into account when we talk about these large-scale land use reforms. And I think SB 50 did a part of that. And as that bill moves forward, my understanding is that there are ongoing conversations to try to incorporate these concerns, things like first right of return, not allowing developers to utilize any sort of density increases if they have evicted the tenant on site. I think there's a lot of measures that can be incorporated into any bill that reforms land use to make sure that the most vulnerable residents are not negatively impacted as a consequence of that policy.
Teresa in Studio City said one of the reasons that we as residents of these single-family communities have a problem with big increases in multifamily units is that the city doesn't at the same time provide additional green space. So their argument is, you know, if you're going to make it denser, you've got to have more open space for people to access. I don't think that's included in any of these pro-housing bills, though, is it, David?
Yeah, it's not. I would say that most cities have kind of decided how they would like to prioritize that specific issue. So some cities require development fees to be paid into a fund to pay for more green space, to pay for parks. Other cities will negotiate directly with developers to try and get them to incorporate green space or public space into their development. So that's really, up until this point, been done on a case-by-case basis by individual cities.
Of course, the challenge is getting enough space if these are all individual developer parcels to do that. Thank you so much, David Garcia, UC Berkeley's Turner Center for Housing Innovation. Also joining us is Democratic State Senator Scott Wiener of San Francisco. Senator, good to have you with us again. What are your plans for the next legislative session for something like, you know, son of SB 50 or something to mandate more housing in California?
Thanks for having me. I'm sorry for the background noise. I'm outside now. Well, we don't need a son of SB 50 because SB 50 is still alive and well. It was made a two-year bill, which means that that instead of being passed in this current year, it gets moved to next year. So the bill will be eligible to come up in the Senate for a vote in January, and that's what we intend to do. We are continuing to work with stakeholders around the state, advocates, local governments, and so forth to refine the bill, but we're committed to passing it.
We were talking with former L.A. County Supervisor and former L.A. City Councilman Zev Yaroslavsky on this issue, and you know, his argument was that a bill like SB 50, what it really does is mandate that there's more housing, but in a city like Los Angeles, it's all going to be high-end. Very little is going to be what people who are minimum wage earners, even with two people working, would be able to afford, and that this really ends up benefiting developers building expensive projects. Your response to that?
I just don't agree with that at all. The reality is that California has a 3.5 million home deficit. We are literally short 3.5 million homes. And just in the sheer numbers, in terms of homes per capita, comparing the number of housing units versus number of people, we are 49 out of 50 states. So we just need a lot more housing of all varieties. And the reality is that right now, all housing is expensive because there's not enough of it. And so, yes, you start building housing, it's all expensive. But over time, it becomes less expensive as you close the deficit. And to say, well, we're short 3.5 million homes, and if you start building housing, the first ones you build are going to be expensive, so therefore don't build anything, it just makes no sense. And what SB 50 does is it says that as we build more housing, let's make sure that it's legal under the zoning to put it near public transportation and near jobs, because what we don't want to do is create more sprawl, right? Because if we don't allow housing near where the jobs are, near where transit is, it's going to get built further and further away. It's going to be sprawl, covering up farmland. People are going to have to commute 2 hours to work and put more carbon into the atmosphere. So what Zev Yaroslavsky is advocating, what he's advocating is that we build the housing as sprawl further and further away. And that is terrible for the environment. It's terrible for many reasons. So we need to put that housing where the jobs are so people don't have to commute 2 hours to work.
Well, his argument actually was that because you're taking single-family homes and that now is going to host multi-unit large structures, you've increased the value of the land so much that then there should be a quid pro quo with the developers that they do a much higher percentage of affordable housing, that he was saying something like 40% of the units would be affordable for those like two people making minimum wage, that they could live there, but that's not included in SB 50. So he was talking about that, not suburban development.
Well, first of all, having multi-unit is going to be a lot more affordable than having a single-family home. In big swaths of Los Angeles and the Bay Area, single-family homes are incredibly expensive, and most people would never be able to afford it. So let's be very clear. Single-family homes in a lot of L.A. are not affordable to just about anyone that I know. But we do have a strong requirement for affordability in these projects under SB 50, up to 25%. Which is higher than what's required in L.A., it's higher than what's required in San Francisco, it's a high requirement, and we're committed to that. In addition, a lot of affordable housing nonprofit developers, these are the organizations that build affordable housing for low-income people, many of them are supporting this bill because when you have single-family home zoning, when all you allow are single-family homes, that is a ban on affordable housing. So what Zev Yaroslavsky is advocating in defending single family home zoning is to continue a ban on building affordable housing.
All right. I want to thank you, Senator Wiener, for joining us. I appreciate it very much. Democratic State Senator Scott Wiener of San Francisco. He's the author of SB 50. The bill is continuing into the next session of the California legislature. You can share your comments about the future of single-family home neighborhoods in Greater Los Angeles on the AirTalk page, kpcc.org.